following is a repeat show that was previously broadcast on Unity FM.
Welcome back, and once again, thank you for joining us on Unity FM. My name is Beresford Dawkins. I'm the Community Development Manager for Birmingham and Solihull Mental Health Trust, where we look after some 60,000 patients across Birmingham and Solihull, and we're in partnership with Unity FM, where we have been hosting a health and wellbeing programme called What Shape Are You In for just coming up 5 years, and really glad that you can join us this afternoon. Always a pleasure to be here, and always a pleasure to have my guest and panelist experts by experience to talk about the various different topics that we talk about week in, week out. And this week is no different. We're talking about prostate cancer. And as we've heard from our panelists, Kaltner, Adrian, Owen and Richard, that if you are 45 plus, happen to be black and brown or brown, you are likely to be diagnosed with prostate cancer. But there is hope, there's opportunities, there's treatment, there's help. But as we discovered, unless men in particular start to talk about this and we create environments such as a radio program, thank you, Richard, for that plug. Radio programs like this is helping to have the discussions about the importance of subjects like prostate cancer. And whilst sometimes there's challenges around going and talking to your GP, as Kalpner reminded us, we need to be having those conversations long before we go to the GP. So it's really important that we start to normalise and have the conversation in various different settings, various different environments. And I'm really pleased to say that some of our panellists is doing some of that work already. And again, just coming back to yourself, and we're going to talk about the symptoms, by the way, and also some of the signs and what happens when you finally walk into the GP studio and you're going to get yourself tested, what actually happens. We're going to do some of that myth busting. 0121 772 8892, if you want to join in on this conversation, if you want to send a text, 0794 777 3949. So if I could start with our community development manager, who's been doing a lot of awareness out there in the community, just going off the back of normalizing and trying to have these conversations, which are not necessarily staged, but trying to normalize the situation. What are some of the things that you've been doing through Mind Owing? You talked about the work that you've been doing with Adrian as well.
Primarily, we've been working alongside Aidan. So Aidan's kind of partnered with us. So whenever we have an event, like, for example, at Kia or Aston Villa or wherever, We tend to invite Aidan along to do a slot. I was doing some work with the Countryman's Club in Borsall Heath, and I invited Aidan to come down and do a prostate cancer awareness session. The Asian Resource Centre, there was a men's group there, and I invited Aidan down to do some discussions in and around prostate cancer. Currently, I'm working, well, helping, hoping to help Aidan to reach black men within the community in terms of targeting barbershops. I mean, we were told that black men are hard to reach. I was told that a few years ago by someone from Prostate Cancer UK in London. And I says, well, they're not hard to reach. You just need to go to where they are, you know, go to where they are and confront them. But of course, there's a wisdom involved in all of that as well, because of course, black men respond differently than other ethnicities. All ethnicities have their own characteristics, don't they? And so we've had a couple of meetings. We've had a couple of meetings, myself and Aidan, and then we've met with some so-called, not community leaders, but you know, individuals who have their ear to the ground where the Black community is concerned, to see if we can devise a strategy for reaching Black men in terms of raising awareness, but also in terms of setting up small groups, whether it's in a barbershop or wherever it may be, you know, to begin the discussion and to start talking about prostate cancer and the adverse effects it can have on individuals. As the statistic says, one in eight? If you're white, it's one in eight. If you're Black, it's one in four. So.
And should we be talking to places of worship? Because
yes, that's another thing that we want to target as well. Places of worship as well.
Most of our men are hanging out these days.
Definitely, most definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. We want to start. My passion is to start a campaign. I mean, this people really need to know how serious this thing is. I mean, if you don't catch it in time, you know, that's you won't see your grandchildren possibly or whatever. So this is serious business, and some people probably don't. I mean, one of the meetings me and Aidan went to, one of the suggestions were, well, you know, where we were talking about Black men in particular, and one of the responses were, well, some I could walk outside and get knocked over. Why do I have to worry about this? Or I can, you know what I mean? That kind of stuff. So it's really about really getting that message across that, you know, you don't have to die early from this. If early diagnosis, you know, if you get diagnosed early.
And early diagnosis is the key. And we've just touched on diet there, I think. Is diet important in this? Richard, this is probably one for you, I think. I don't know. Because, again, and we are going to talk about symptoms and warning signs. Where does diet fit in this? And again, Aidan, if you want to jump in, that's fine.
The line would be that, you know, we should all try and follow a healthy, well-balanced diet, you know, reduced red meat, increase our vegetables and fruit content, you know, steer clear of, you know, some sorts of dairy and the, you know, the saturated fat, you know, but we're only here once, you know, we've got to enjoy ourselves, you know, the line that we use is, you know, you can switch to a tofu diet and you might live longer, but you'll feel every minute of it. So there has to be a balance, you know. So you should enjoy what you're having. Just think sensibly about what you're doing. There are possible links between, you know, red meat, animal fats that may make you more at risk of some cancers. Certainly heart disease may be a risk factor for a risk factor as well. So a well-balanced diet, but, you know, discussing these things with your GP, with the practice nurse, you know, with your friends, you know, and family. Start to talk about it, you know, make health part of your everyday conversation. We say, good morning, how are you? How often do you actually listen to what the response is?
Very, very true. Listening is an important part of this whole conversation piece. My understanding, and I'm sure you'll correct me if I'm wrong on this, both yourself and Aidan, there are some warning signs. I believe there are five. There may be more. Richard, as the nurse, you wanna walk us through what men and their partners should be looking for.
Yes. So there's a whole range of potential warning signs. Now, none of these are specific to prostate cancer, but these are things that you should probably go and have a chat with someone about. So if we find that we're finding it harder to maintain an erection, this is called erectile dysfunction. This is something we should go and talk to our doctor about, because as much as anything, you know, we still want to perform. When the planets are all lined up and we've got a bit of Barry White on the stereo, we want to be able to be reliable.
I've got to say this, the man said Barry White. I almost want to burst that in song, but I'm not going to do that. Whatever you want. Anyway, sorry, I did it.
This is something that we might want to go and talk to the doctor about anyway, but it may be a sign of early prostate cancer. You know, if, you know, we're getting up at night to pass water a bit more frequently, it might be annoying the lady, you know. So we might want to go and see whether we can get a better night's sleep, you know. And if we find that when we're having intercourse, we see some blood in the ejaculate, that would be, you know, worrying. Why would you ignore that? So these are all surrogate indicators of something that might need to be addressed. So go and speak to the doctor about it. You don't want to diagnose it yourself. You shouldn't be diagnosing it yourself. You shouldn't be ignoring it. But just to try and make these potentially worrying, and if nothing else, bothersome symptoms, why would you not want to improve them? You know, Aidan is someone who's been through the diagnostic process. He may want to talk about some of the other symptoms that he will be, you know, being evangelical about.
If you can get past the Barry White, Aidan, yeah, please. Sure.
I mean, the first thing is, if you want to catch it early, there may be no symptoms, which is a big problem, isn't it? How do you catch something that has no symptoms? And that's by knowing, are you at increased risk? Be proactive about that. Go and see your GP. I mean, we don't wait till our engine explodes, do we? Before we, you know, we do maintenance on it and things like that. And we do diagnostics. And a blood test is a diagnostic. And that's how I was caught. You know, I was one of those proud guys that, you know, I think when I was diagnosed, I'd only ever had 2 days off sick. I avoided the doctor. I didn't need the doctor. You know, I'm fit, I'm strong, I'm healthy. And it was a work medical because they were flying me around all the world all the time. And so they needed to make sure, you know, I wasn't going to fall ill somewhere expensive. And this included a blood test. I didn't know what this blood test was all about. And I think the doctor was just as shocked as I was when it had a high reading and then referred me on to the urologist and then onto scans and onto a biopsy, which was the diagnosis. Probably just as importantly, I have a brother. He's a year older than me, so he's now in this high risk category, and his GP has been actually excellent. He sees her once a year on a proactive basis and gives him a blood test, and once a year he discovers that he's one of the 7 out of 8. I'm one of the 1 out of 8, but he's one of the 7 out of 8. Wow. So he sees it as a positive thing. I mean, he's getting an all clear every year.
That's brilliant.
So rather than, you know, so he doesn't dread it, his annual test. And that's the other thing. It is an annual test for him because he's at high risk. The GPs may, you know, say, you know, it doesn't need to be annually, but it needs to be more than one off.
And is it just the blood test that guys should be thinking about? Are there other tests that people should be concerning themselves about?
There are other tests, but the blood test gives us, you know, a pretty good idea of what sort of ballpark we need to be thinking about. Often these days, men will get a scan of their prostate after a blood test before we even see the whites of their eyes or lay our hands on them. The thing that puts a lot of men off, and why wouldn't it, would be the dreaded rectal examination. Now, let me tell you, there's not many men that run to the front of that queue saying, please, can I have a rectal examination? Mm. Because it ain't nice, you know, but it doesn't last forever. And we can get a pretty good working diagnosis without having to do that. And if you are so set about not having it, that's fine. We won't force you. We can't force you. It might help add to our diagnostic jigsaw, but without it, we'll just work through it.
Brilliant. 0121-772-8892. As you heard, as much as this might feel a bit uncomfortable, sound uncomfortable, as you can hear, there's lots of support, there's lots of help. There's the symptoms that you might become aware of after this program, or even during this program, you're thinking, yeah, that's me. So go and get yourself tested. Yeah. Go on, Adrian.
Do you know what else is really uncomfortable that I really don't like? And that's going to the dentist.
That's true.
You do it, don't you?
Mm.
You go in it and you deal with it and yeah, you get on with your life afterwards. But that's because, you know, your smile's so important to you, isn't it?
It sure is. Yes,
some people are frightened of the dentist, but you just got to overcome that.
So yeah, and you're right. we've got to overcome it. We've got to try and have some kind of normalization going on here, how we just talk about stuff and stop the issue of shame and embarrassment and stop being proud. And so, Kalpna, we're doing some amazing things. Early diagnosis is the key. Lots of conversations is also the key. Get yourself tested. If you haven't got a great relationship with your GP, certainly there's other people that you can be talking to. So from your department point of view, some more golden nuggets that we can be dealing with in term or should know about. Give us some more information, please, if you would.
Yeah, so I think the first thing I would say is this conversation today and every conversation that anybody's ever going to have about cancer, this is the way to think about it is we want to stack the odds against cancer. So if you're born after 1960, one out of two will get a cancer diagnosis. Cancer is indiscriminate. We know that. And at the moment, two out of four will survive an early cancer diagnosis. But because of advances in treatment and early diagnosis behavior, by 2028, the government is saying three out of four people will survive a cancer diagnosis. I mean, that's pretty huge. And they're numbers that hopefully we can all relate to. We know from our previous time on your show, Beresford, there's three cancer screening programs. There's breast screening, there's bowel screening, and there's cervical screening. And there's so much information available about these programs. But the reason we have those three cancer screening programs is there's enough evidence to suggest if we screen people for those three cancer sites at a certain age, that if we pick up anything that's abnormal, that there's a potential for an early diagnosis and successful treatment. We don't have a screening program for prostate, but you can see from the work that's being done that GP practices are working hard to identify men who potentially could have a prostate cancer diagnosis. But this is a two-way relationship between the person and the health system. And the health system has changed so much over the last 3 years, you know, because of COVID and because of life and how expensive life has become. Mm-hmm. But the simple take-home message is the GP surgeries are there to find and support patients who might potentially have a cancer diagnosis. The screening programs are there to catch cancers early. We know the three biggest risk factors for cancer are tobacco, number one, alcohol, number two, and obesity, number three. And just even people knowing that, just those three risk factors, and we can all start to think about, do we need to modify something within our lives? If we're worried about something, could we talk to somebody about this? Does it have to be a health professional? Could it be somebody else? If we're in the know, can we share that knowledge with our dads, our uncles, our fathers, our grandfathers? Because too many people die from a late cancer diagnosis. And unfortunately, with prostate cancer, genetically, some of our communities suffer more. And so if we can do anything to support our loved ones, anything at all, just to open that conversation, let's do it. I totally believe in what Aidan and Richard had to say in Owen today. Just do it. Talk to that person next to you because you love them and you don't want them to have a late cancer diagnosis. And then the health system will take care of that person.
That's excellent. 0121 772 8892. You heard it direct. And I just wanted to ask you, Kalpna, we've been talking about the importance of men talking, but what can our loved ones, our wives, our girlfriends, our daughters, what role can they play in helping the men to have the conversation or even talk about it?
I think, you know, find a safe space and talk to them or find somebody who they'll listen to. And it, you know, it doesn't have to be their GP, in the barbershop, at the church, you know, in the community club. And I think talking is the first best step because a lot of people hold on to their ill health for too long and they don't talk about it and they don't realize what help they can have. So if you're listening, if you're a mom, a sister, girlfriend, partner, you know, if you find that your partner's worrying about their health, talk to them about it. And also signposting. We have So in GP surgeries, we have people in roles now called social prescribers, and they're there to look after people who need a bit of support around their health, but they might not necessarily need to see their GP. It might be about something else. So actually, we're in a good place that if we can start the conversation, we can start opening up that conversation further, especially in communities where, you know, it might be men, it might be older men, it might be younger men, it might be women, where it's, you know, it might be a little bit taboo to talk about cancer, that actually providing that supportive space is a really good first step. And, you know, we're in a world where you can connect to anybody really quickly, and there's so much information out there, but it's getting the right information as well. So that's where I think it's important. If you're worried, try and contact your GP.
Brilliant. And is there a website through your organisation that we can inform people about the early intervention side of things?
Yeah, so I think for prostate cancer, we've got Prostate Cancer UK National Charity. We've also got ORCID. There's a whole host of charities that people can look for. I think the best thing to do is to go onto the NHS website and then search.
Okay.
Because that's the data that's the evidence and information that's most up to date. You know, people look for information on Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat, and I would say don't do that. Go to the trusted source.
Let me just pause you there, Calvin, because we've got a caller on the line, and we're just going to take this call. Hi, caller, are you there?
Hello, you're on, mate.
Yeah, thank you for calling. How can we help you today?
I just wanted to contribute and say, you know, you guys talking about cancer and getting diagnosed and seeing the doctor. There's some issues around, like, I think people have become a bit disillusioned with going to the doctor and getting that referral done. And I'm not just speaking about myself. My own personal experience is not great with getting referrals. Quite often told, as I've heard on the show, that, you know, you're fine, don't worry about it, your age, or give it 2 weeks and you'll be fine. Excuse me. I mean, I've currently got a cough, which I've had for about 4 weeks. I've been to the doctor about four times, and they've just sent me on, said nothing wrong with you kind of thing, and which is fair enough, that's their diagnosis. My issue is, and friends of mine are, that the referrals are just not being done, whether that's down to they've got targets, financial targets, or I don't know what they are, but it feels as though there's some sort of, I don't know what the word is, but there's a reluctance to make them referrals to investigate.
I just, Richard, I don't know if you picked that up as the practitioner and nurse. Is there anything you want to add to our caller there? You're saying they're disillusioned with the service, a bit like what we were saying earlier about how GPs interact with patients.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that experience, but I think it's one that is echoed by a lot of men and women. Some things can be sorted out with a GP. You know, they've made their their assessment. They've made the treatment. Not everything you go to the doctor needs to be referred up to the hospital. Just a statistic that I can give you: since the 5th of July. I have received over 1,000 prostate referrals for the University Hospital Birmingham Trust where I work. So a lot of referrals are coming to us. So I think we have to trust, in our GPs that they are, independent practitioners. They do a lot of training. So they probably are making a good judgment call. However, go to another GP in the practice if you're concerned. Don't take, no as an answer. If you're genuinely concerned, please do pursue it, because another set of eyes on the same problem may just throw up something different. If you get a number of people coming to the same conclusion, well, hey, that conclusion is probably right. But if you get a difference of opinion, that's where you're probably thinking, well, thank goodness I went back to see someone else. So it's not don't take no for an answer, it's just don't take no for the first answer.
Was that able to help answer your question, caller?
Yeah, kind of does. I told you again that not every sort of ailment needs a referral in the first instance. I mean, from my personal experience, my mum, she had cancer. Now, when we went to the doctor, she was complaining of shoulder pain or whatever. We went to the doctor and he prescribed they diagnosed as muscular pain, so they gave us some codeine, I think it is, or the slightly stronger one, I'm not sure what it's called. So they gave her that paracetamol or whatever. She was still in pain. We went back again the second week, excruciating pain. And then they said the same thing, and then they gave her a stronger painkiller. And then after that, we called the ambulance a couple of times, and, you know, it was similar again. Just told, like, it's, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. I had to go to a chiropractor after advice from all my friends who worked in healthcare. I had to go to a chiropractor.
Really sorry, you've called us right at the end of the program. I've literally got about 30 seconds left.
No worries.
We could probably pick this up after if you want to, but thank you for calling in anyway. Really appreciate you calling in. And all that remains me to say is really thank you so much to Kalpana, Aidan, Owen, and Richard for a really brilliant conversation about prostate cancer. And we're coming to the end of the program. And thank you very much, everyone, for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you
for having us, Beresford.